This week in the markets, volatility sent gold and silver and related shares sharply higher, with the Dow Jones down over 500 points. Well, welcome back, everyone. Your host, Chris Walczak, back with you on this November 16th, Season 13, Episode 670 edition, with another two big guest interviews. Thanks to all our listeners and subscribers. It's really difficult to believe that for over 14 years, Goldseek has put up a new show each weekend for you, so your support, as always, is really appreciated. Well, U.S. investors took profits on stocks again this week. The Dow Jones ended off nearly 600, sending gold sharply higher. Have investors factored in the remaining rate hikes? Well, the U.S. dollar seems to indicate maybe they have. The greenback sell-off helped propel funds into the yellow metal. Joining me to help determine if 2019 will be the year for the gold bulls to remember, Rob Kirby. Kirby Analytics sees extreme risks ahead for the financial markets via a shattered U.S. accounting system. His work and that of Catherine Austin Fitz notes that $21 trillion, that's the size of the national debt, has gone missing in our accounting system, and maybe it's being used to prop up the plunge protection team and keep the markets afloat. But what if the robust lady has sung and it might be over? Well, we'll have to see. We might have another Cypriot slash Poland style financial market reset where people wake up and find that they have half as much dineros as they thought they had. He notes that precious metals are vastly discounted. Carpe diem, aurum, seize the gold today. And then Bill Murphy of Gata, our longtime friend over a decade, returns with fresh insights on the precious metals rally this week. The Bank of England actually refused to honor its custodial arrangement to return 14 tons of gold held on behalf of Venezuela, essentially saying,
"We don't trust you, old boy, so we'll hold on to your gold for now. Ta-ta."
This might indicate dissent among the central banking ranks, sending potential reverberations throughout the global financial system. And we certainly saw that with Facebook down over almost 50% from its July peak. And then the longest remaining Dow Jones component, industrial component, General Electric, plunged from over 30 just last year to $8 today. What is going on there? Well, the trend is down. GE is now expected to be ejected from the Dow, the longest remaining blue chip in the Dow 30. Sayonara. And I'd like to remind everyone that, you know, we just saw the worst wildfire in California history. That on the heels of some of the worst fires all year long and for a couple of years there. 44, at least 44, and I think I saw as high as 68 fatalities now. Hundreds missing, hundreds of thousands evacuated. It is a complete disaster. The entire area of Paradise is gone. There's nothing left. These people need our help. They'll be stranded in tents in very cold weather in central to northern California for at least 6 months. Many of them tent cities now, flowing to over capacity. I know I've got a lot of folks there in the Golden State listening. And if you can spare a couch, an RV, anything you can do, please reach out to your local Red Cross. Easy to sign up online. And we'd also like you to remember the pets. Many of them stranded, they can use a home, and you can just sponsor them. You don't have to keep them forever, but help them find a home. It's not terribly hard for our retirees especially. And remember, we'd like for you to try to remember the folks in North Carolina, South Carolina, as well as Florida and parts of Georgia that were really brutally hit hard by our hurricane season this year. Thousands still displaced and homeless. Again, if you have any resources or you'd like to sign up for the Red Cross, again, so easy to do. Robert Ian wraps up the show with his latest report, and we'd like for you to call into our Q&A hotline. I'd like to get to that as soon as next week. 641-715-3900, extension number 514049. Please jot this down on a post-it note. You can just pause and then write it down. Listen as many times as you like. You can record and cancel. Delete as many times as you like. Get it just right if you'd prefer. 641-715-3900. Your questions and comments welcome as soon as next week. Mailbox number 514049. Goldseek.com radio begins now with a market weather recap. Visibility virtually unlimited over the precious metals sector as funds flowed in amid a global stock market sell-off, investors unnerved by Fed official comments and continued trade war threats. At Friday's closing bell, the yellow metal added, though, 1440, finishing at 1223. Silver picked up 24 cents, popping up to 1438, while the XEU precious metal shares added 2 points, 3%, ending at 6608. However, black gold continued its downtrend, about a six-week sell-off, down $3.50, 6% at 5670. Now, yes, that's the bad news. I see incredible signs of capitulation here. I like $56 crude oil. Can't see that as a bad entry point for long-term investors who are also looking for $100 a barrel. Palladium added 1154. Yeah, you heard that right. $1,154, a new record high driven by supply concerns. And again, I was one of the few big mouths that I know online who's been calling for parity with gold, and we nearly hit it. More about this topic in a few moments. The Bitcoin ETF, however, was off $1.14, down to $6. And I did warn for months that a close under 6,000 would lead to a sell-off, and we got it. As soon as we hit 6,000, it never looked back to 5,100. Treading water here, caution advisable here, folks. Meanwhile, gold flew higher 1% on Friday as the greenback dropped from a new intermonth record on the heels of dovish comments from the U.S. Federal Reserve officials. Two policymakers cautioned that global GDP was waning, which sent the dollar lower on anticipation of perhaps lessened rate hikes next year. Although we will see a rate hike in December, according to the Fed Funds futures contracts at the COMEX exchange. The news sent the dollar lower against the basket of six major currencies and sent the yellow metal to a one-week high on Friday. Plus, the Brexit concerns continued regarding Britain's plan to pull away from the Eurozone, ratcheted up geopolitical tensions, improving gold's safe haven appeal worldwide. In related news, the former semi-precious metal turned precious now, palladium, as I mentioned, blasted higher into orbit on speculation that Beijing would provide a stimulus to Chinese automakers. So with global vehicle sales expected to soar to 100 million next year, and of course China leading that growth in small gasoline engines, clearly the rousing tiger nation has an inelastic demand. The metal is primarily used in pollution control catalytic converters on those gas-powered vehicles. Bottom line, precious metals and Bitcoin. Every investor likes to buy discounts, and that's exactly what was handed to them on a silver platter, pun fully intended, especially given the dovish comments from the Fed. Now, the technical picture for gold and silver shares, very positive. A double bottom might be forming here. So if the dollar pause continues, it might just be the jolt needed to send prices higher. And, of course, we have the Indian festival and wedding seasons, plus Western holiday season all around the corner. So let's see a nice bullish assault on 1,300 bulls. Moving on to the Wall Street Report, heavy cloud cover returned to the New York Stock Exchange on growing concerns around the Brexit deal. Plus, nervous Fed officials sent confusing signals on rate hikes, which increased investor jitters. Still, by Friday, 22 components of the 30 blue chip index closed higher in the green, only 8 finished in the red, with the bulls regaining their composure as traders digested the stronger than expected U.S. retail sales figures. For the week, the Dow gave back 576, 2%, the S&P off 45, 1.5%, and the NASDAQ gave back 160, 2%. The top story pushing global equities lower on Thursday, news that the United States and China have increased efforts to resolve lingering trade disputes. That according to the Financial Times report, that both the United States and China had doubled their efforts to hammer out a reasonable solution to this 8-month-long trade war between the two global superpowers. The president and Chinese counterpart Xi Jinping are slated to meet later this month at the G20 summit in Buenos Aires, Argentina. Evidently, China has agreed to remove several demands for the U.S. government regarding Chinese trade practices. Officials in the U.S. have offered an olive branch to put upcoming tariffs on Chinese goods on hold, with the proviso on the levy of tariffs worth $265 billion in Chinese goods, assuming that the upcoming meeting between the two presidents leads to a solid resolution. In related domestic economic news, on November 15th, the U.S. Department of Commerce reported that U.S. retail sales for the month of October were up nearly 1%, topping the consensus estimates. Retail sales in October grew nearly 5% year-over-year on strong motor vehicle and building materials sales, along with electronics and appliances. Why is this so important to investors? Consumer spending now comprises 70% of our U.S. GDP, suggesting a much stronger fourth quarter GDP outcome. The U.S. economy is currently on track for 3.3% growth, very solid, in 2018. On a slightly negative note, the U.S. Department of Labor revealed weekly initial jobless claims rose 2% higher than expected by economists' forecasts. And the consumer price index increased 0.3%. That was about in line, though, with expectations. While the core was up 0.2%. In global geopolitical news, the Brexit drama in UK rolled forward with the latest news and the resignation of Brexit Secretary Dominic Raab, the second in the cabinet to leave after Prime Minister Theresa May reiterated plans for an organized exit from the European Union. U.S. shares, bottom line. Well, U.S. equities remain in corrective mode, with the FANG and related tech shares deeply underwater. And you would expect that because, you know, they move very far above the mean. And so the return to the mean will be a bit sharp. These are high alpha, high beta stocks. So, you know, with the gains comes some pain. While there are some signs of sector rotation, for the most part, investors are, I think, advised to remain a bit cautious here near term. We see increasing political uncertainty and the trade sanctions. But on a positive note, the USA Today Greed to Fear Index is in such an extremely fearful zone that one would expect that the herd is usually wrong. We might just see a nice bottom in the weeks ahead. Coming up after the break, more Gold Seek Radio.
Rob Kirby, macroeconomist, formerly at the Bank of Nova Scotia, returns to the show with his latest market insights on the precious metals. Welcome back, Rob Kirby.
Pleasure to be with you again.
Great to have you back. Start off with the obvious situation. Raised rates last week, and they want to raise rates again in December. This might not sound, at least on paper, great for the precious metals. Why might that thesis be incorrect?
Let's just say interest rates and the bond complex are one of the biggest crime scenes capital markets have ever seen. And to explain that, it's an extremely multifaceted issue to explain it. I'm going to be rhetorical in answering the question why it wouldn't be an accurate take on the situation. First and foremost, I'd like to talk about why the United States has never had a failed bond auction. The United States of America is the only debt-issuing sovereign entity in the world that has never had a failed bond auction, and yet they're the biggest issuer of debt in the world. Next thing we might want to talk about is a missing $21 trillion, money that has passed through the books of the Department of Defense and HUD, Housing and Urban Development. This is evidenced by the investigative work of Dr. Mark Skidmore, a professor in a prestigious research chair at Michigan State University, with his research staff, doing work in conjunction with Catherine Austin Fitz, former Undersecretary of Housing and Urban Development in the Bush 1 administration. Their investigative work has shown that between the years 1998 and 2015, $21 trillion has gone through the books of those two government agencies, and it's unaccounted for, and they can't explain where it's gone. After these revelations being made last December on Greg Hunter's broadcast USA Watchdog, Dr. Skidmore made these revelations, and a week later, the White House ordered a complete audit of the Department of Defense, first time that had ever happened in the history of the Department of Defense. Well, guess what happened regarding this audit? It was in August that Catherine Fitz uncovered Department of Defense basically has made the investigation into the missing money is an issue of national security, and the findings and the financials of the Department of Defense are now classified, which basically means the United States government no longer has accounting. So we've got a government that doesn't have accounting. We've got a missing $21 trillion in money that was, at least in my view, it had to have been and necessarily was fraudulently created. The Federal Reserve had to have had a hand in doing that. And now we've got to start to connect some dots. I turn your listeners to the work of Chris Martinson, and I urge you to go to his website or Google the name Chris Martinson and Crash Course. And you will be taken, if you follow the link of Chris Martinson and Crash Course, you'll be taken to, let's just say, an expose on the life cycle of fiat money. What the life cycle of fiat money, so it shows that in a system of fiat money with compound interest, growth goes gently sloping upward to the right until it reaches an inflection point when the growth has to be vertical. And we are now on the vertical part of the growth curve of the U.S. fiat dollar. And the people that run the dollar and who are the, let's just say, the stewards of the dollar are very aware that, and have been because they model everything, they've been aware that money supply would have to grow vertical at some point, and they've known this for at least 20 or 25 years, and this is why they have $21 trillion at least, and they've siloed that money in dark places, slush funds, like the Exchange Stabilization Fund, the secretive adjunct of the U.S. Treasury. This is an entity that was created in 1934, and it was created with the sole purpose of maintaining the, let's just say, the integrity or the relevance of the U.S. dollar in international trade. When you've got a currency that you need to create infinite amounts of because you're on the vertical part of the growth curve, very, very difficult to steal this money or to create this money in dribs and drabs. So instead what they've done is they've taken a huge lump sum, they put it in a very dark place, and this is money that they use to marshal up to buy bonds when foreigners aren't. And if there's anything anyone who's paying attention would know, in the last 2 to 3 years, foreigners have not been participating and buying bonds, U.S. government bond auctions, and in fact, they've been selling bonds that they currently hold. So the question becomes, who's buying the bonds? I mean, the United States of America has created $1.4 trillion in new government debt in the last 12 months. Who's bought that debt when foreigners are selling their existing debt? And what it really becomes a matter of is who's buying the debt? Well, the debt is being monetized.
If we navigate to the St. Louis Fed's website, you can see clearly the Fed's balance sheet is contracting for the first time since the Great Recession about 10 years ago. But if, you know, your work and their work is correct, there might be a shell game going on here.
It's the St. Louis Fed that is the data keeper for U.S. monetary aggregates. Let's just say that they tell us the money supply is X. Well, the money supply that they claim to be X does not include the fraudulently created $21 trillion that's missing, that's gone through the books of, two U.S. government agencies. So if you add the $21 trillion onto what is acknowledged to be money supply, the number is a lot different. Additionally, when one talks about the much ballyhooed Fed saying that they've ended QE and they're now reducing the size of their balance sheet, I look at it and say, jolly good. Maybe the Fed is reducing the size of their balance sheet. Maybe the Fed did stop QE, but the Exchange Stabilization Fund and the $21 trillion that is stuffed in the socks of the Exchange Stabilization Fund, they certainly, at least in my view, they certainly haven't stopped QE.
I mean, if this is really going on, and it seems like it could be, we're still stuck in a slow motion train wreck. And of course, we admire Chris Martinson. He's on the show regularly here. Good friend of the show. And he, you know, has a tendency to uncover some intriguing facts. It sounds like they might be onto something. But you know, if we look at history, especially in economics, finance, if there's one thing that governments are absolutely great at, our policymakers, it's finding novel all ways of keeping the train wreck going for as long as possible. You know, the wheels may be off, but they'll find a way to keep it on the rails. You know, how long before you think this ultimate wreck, you know, is apparent to everyone? If there really is $21 trillion out there, the markets will smell that out. They'll figure it out at some point. And you'll see the dollar, you know, obviously react sharply to this news.
The very first thing that you would expect to react to such a development would be for the price of precious metals to rocket higher. But precious metals have been put in jail. And precious metals have been put in jail because they can use the very fiat money that they fraudulently created to sell unlimited amounts of futures contracts that contain no metal. So you see, having this war chest of this money that is not acknowledged to exist allows and gives them great latitude to perpetrate the fraud. And this, in my view, is exactly what's going on. And this is why nobody on Wall Street or from Politico will dare talk about the Exchange Stabilization Fund. Doing so basically opens you up to talking about issues of national security and make you as wanted as Edward Snowden. And this is why this is a topic which is verboten and nobody's allowed to, you know, communicate or talk about. The other thing I'll say to you, if the Fed truly is reducing its balance sheet, which they may or may not be doing, because I think there's 101 ways that they can obfuscate such an operation anyway, if we're to believe that there's been no QE, another comment I hear from the mainstream quite frequently and have done so over the last number of years is they keep saying that there's a dollar liquidity problem in the world. There may be a tinge of truth. There's always usually a kernel of truth in things that were fed by the mainstream media. The really big thing that I'd like to draw people's attention to, let's look at global equity markets around the world, record highs everywhere. Let's look at global real estate markets, pretty much record highs everywhere. Let's look at the global market for fine art. Let's look at the global market for collectibles, whether it's high-end cars, record highs for everything. Is that sort of the backdrop, what I just described, of these reality situations? Is that a backdrop that denotes illiquidity of dollars? I would say quite the opposite. What we're seeing in terms of nominal price levels in everything around the world, except precious metals, of course, is that there's an abundance of dollars and too many dollars looking for a home. So I don't buy into the notion that the world is starved of dollar liquidity at all. There never seems to be a lack of money for your country to engage in a new military excursion, and there's always presage for more and more and more of this everywhere. This is not indicative of conditions where dollars are in short supply. Like I say, what it's indicative of is exactly the opposite, and it's very consistent with the notion that there's an unseen amount and a stiflingly large amount of dollars that are used on a discretionary basis by the stewards of the dollar as the world's reserve currency.
Well, it certainly makes for an intriguing Economic X-Files episode. But let's also talk about, you know, the inflation we're starting to see appear in commodities. I mean, you know, West Texas Intermediate crude, and we're also seeing signs of life in several of the commodities. Palladium, viewed as a solid economic indicator, it's on track to perhaps touch as high as the yellow metal. Dr. Copper waking up too. Hey, give us your thoughts on commodities.
Crude oil, that's one of my favorite things to talk about up here in Canada. We sell the United States of America roughly 2 million barrels a day. And our oil that we sell to America, because it comes from the tar sands, it's referred to as being heavy oil in its origin. But this heavy oil, or tar sand oil, doesn't flow very easily through pipelines. So it has to be sweetened. And it's refined up to a grade where it's referred to as Western Canadian Select. And our Western Canadian Select oil, which we're locked into selling it to America because we don't have pipelines in Canada, from Western Canada, that go to Tidewater. So our oil that we're selling to America, and we have a very weird energy policy in Canada. Canada is energy positive in terms of we produce enough oil in Canada that we can meet all of our domestic needs, and we have actually a net of about 1.5 million barrels a day that we can are free to export. And that oil all goes to America through pipelines. And because we're captive and we can only ship our oil south, it gets shipped under this, like I say, this Western Canadian Select moniker, but it's synthetic oil. It's synthetic because, like I say, it comes from the tar sands, but it's a very sweet crude that we actually send south. And Western Canadian Select today is trading at $36 a barrel, while, actually it's $34 a barrel, while West Texas Intermediate is trading for $75. So Canada is exporting 1.5 to 2 million barrels a day to America, and we import 1 million barrels a day from the Middle East, and that would be at the Brent crude price. So we're paying $85 a barrel for 1 million barrels per day, and we're selling 1.5 to 2 million barrels to you guys.
Well, thank you.
Isn't it kind? Isn't it kind? And isn't it interesting that this topic and this issue and this fact never surfaced in our trade negotiations with America in this whatever they want to call it, this NAFTA remake? You know, the picture here again, Chris, it's an example of the story or the headlines that were fed by the mainstream aren't necessarily a very good reflection of reality.
So give us an idea then of your overall view here, because it seems to me as though you think that this will have at some point an impact on the markets.
A month ago, we had the German foreign minister say that we need a new system to settle international trade accounts to get around the U.S.-centric SWIFT system that's currently in place. What was it? 2 or 3 days ago, we had the European Union state that they were going to, in response to American sanctions on Iran, we've had the European Union state that they will create a special purpose entity where European-based companies can have a workaround so that they have the special purpose entity be the interface in terms of economic trade with Iran so that companies based in Europe can say, we're not dealing with Iran, we're dealing with this special purpose entity. And it's the special purpose entity that you'll have to go after, or if you're going to have to get upset with, for breaking U.S. Sanctions. Anyway, I make this point because when you ask the question, you know, how is this going to end and what is the world going to do in response to all these things that you claim are happening? Well, you know, my answer is that these things are happening now. And frankly, the world is getting rather upset because the world is becoming very aware that the whole situation with the dollar as the world's reserve currency is not a stable structure going forward. I'm not trying to give Trump a bad deal. I think Trump has been thrown into the wheelhouse of the Titanic after it's hit an iceberg.
No, exactly. And, you know, we're starting to see some regional developments as far as the U.S. dollar is concerned. I mean, obviously, between Beijing and the Middle East and, you know, many of their neighbors, Russia comes to mind, and the Koreas, Japan, they're looking for ways to circumvent the obvious barriers to trade, plus the geopolitical ramifications of having a currency that is so politically unstable. So they're looking for ways around it. Ultimately, it looks as though you're pointing in the direction that the greenback is going to fail. It's losing its global hegemony, and its reserve currency status will remain under attack. What are the implications for investors today?
The implication for investors today, or I would say my biggest concern, is that at some point, Chris, an awful lot of dollars that are held in foreign reserve accounts are going to return home. And I think when it, when the money really starts to return home to America, I think it's going to be like a dam bursting.
This brings us all full circle back to the original point of that, I don't know, $21 trillion slush fund, if you will, or exchange stabilization fund. Some people call it the plunge protection. That's a not, maybe an offshoot of this whole program. You're talking about, you know, sovereign banks dumping our trillions of dollars in debt. That's the nuclear option. That's a sizable amount of money. And what's to keep them from trying to soak up those dollars as they repatriate back to our shores?
I believe that this fraudulent slush fund has already been engaged heavily in buying bonds that are being liquidated by foreign entities. That's already occurring and has been for quite some number of years already. But I think what's really going to happen is the people that are sitting, let's just say the globalist entity that controls this dark money, they're going to realize that their power and their prestige is going to be diminished dramatically because this cache of dark money that they've been sitting on that gives them and has given them up until now the power, if they have fear that this money is going to turn into tapioca or into confetti, my real issue is, what are they going to do? Are they going to sit and watch their power and prestige disintegrate in front of them?
No, they're going to purchase something that will preserve the purchasing power of their transparent, illusory wealth. That may be the case, but they don't care an iota about the listeners, about you, me, anyone else. They're not worried about us. They've got to cover their backs first. We know how they're probably going to try to do that. So is this one of those global resets where we wake up and it's a Cypriot moment like we saw in Poland, where all of a sudden you have the same number currency in your banking or trading or savings account, but it's worth half as much?
That's what I do believe. Ultimately, we will see. We will see a reset at some point, I believe, just magnitudes. You know, Chris, I've been on record for a lot of years. I have said time and time again, I do believe we will. I'm 58 today. I believe I will live to see a day where you cannot buy an ounce of gold with fiat money. Have a time. A time will come when you cannot buy an ounce of gold with fiat money. I think the only way you'll be able to obtain physical gold in the future, there will come a time when you can only do so by bartering for it.
That's, you know, music to the ears of our precious metals aficionados today, you know, and that's what keeps the lights on here in the studio. It has interesting implications for the most unloved paperweight AG. I mean, silver is, despite the fact it's had a little bump from industrial demand recently, it's just on nobody's radar screen. Even our, some of our top economists and analysts just don't have any interest in this metal at all. But if you can't find gold, where are you going to turn next? Especially if you don't have, like most of us here in North America, a whole lot of extra disposable income at the end of the month. You're going to have to turn to something else that will preserve the limited purchasing power available to your household after you put the bread on the table and keep the lights on and pay the landlord. In order to do that, you know, you've got to find something that's relatively inexpensive.
I look at it this way, Chris. Buying gold and silver today, in my view, is metaphorically like buying shares of Microsoft from Bill Gates when he was operating out of his garage.
But this is a tough pill to swallow because markets are supposed to be forward-looking, right? We would be the early birds purchasing up the metals, and you'd start to see some of that reflected in the underlying price. So are you then saying there's more going on here, that there is also manipulation?
People can't see the manipulation in the paper precious metals markets, in the COMEX, in the LBMA, the volume data that they report, the open interest, and to see barrages of selling on the COMEX exchange, where the equivalent of a year's worth of annual global mine production is dumped in paper form on the market in a matter of 3 or 4 hours. It's absolutely absurd, And, you know, and the only reason it's not called out and it's not, dealt with from a legal standpoint by regulators like the CFTC is because this is an official act. The entity behind it is the Exchange Stabilization Fund, which is the U.S. government. And this is what allows people like this woman who used to work, Blythe Masters, who used to work for J.P. Morgan. When people accuse J.P. Morgan of rigging the precious metals prices, and Blythe Masters made the statement years ago, she said, well, we don't take positions for ourselves. We only take positions for customers. Well, if your customer is the Exchange Stabilization Fund and they tell you to sell 3,000 metric tons worth of paper gold in 25 minutes, then that's exactly what you do.
Rob Kirby, we've heard this just so long now. I don't know anyone who doesn't agree with your numbers here. It all adds up, okay? 2 + 2 = 4. At some point, the physical market has to meet the paper market. There has to be an equilibrium point. We don't know what that swan on the horizon is. Will it be the white rhino? You know, who knows? But at some point, you know, we have to come back to reality. The markets have to have, you know, a dose of reality. My guess is you have a feel for what might just bring that day of reckoning.
To me, this has been an evolutionary process. I find it somewhat humorous when people make the statement to me, well, you've been saying this for years, and what's really changed? An awful lot has changed because, you know, 5 years ago, German foreign ministers weren't saying that we needed an alternative in international trade settlement to the dollar. 5 or 10 years ago, the BRICS countries hadn't instituted and built parallel structures to the IMF and the World Bank.
And 5 years ago, you didn't have you were just on the cusp of it, but you didn't have an enormous repatriation of tons of the yellow metal to South America, all over Europe, and every other corner of the earth where policymakers, and more importantly, the people themselves, were terrified that they may not get back their gold if they didn't request it.
Yes, and foreign appetite for physical metal today is much stronger than it was 5 years ago as well, Chris. And this is something that is vectoring up, and the want and the desire to acquire on the physical on behalf of foreigners is something that's intensifying as opposed to abating. So, it's sort of like saying, it's sort of like taking a cup of water out of a pool. You take a cup of water out of a pool every day. You can go many days where nobody even really notices that the pool is being drained, but the pool is being drained. And if you're given accurate data as to how much water is in the pool, you can actually predict the day when the pool will be empty. The real issue we have in terms of determining the size of the pool is that necessarily foreign demand has to be being met with, at least in part, dishoarding of Western central bank gold. And Western central banks guard the data about how much gold they really have in the vault very, very, very carefully. They use fictitious accounting, actually, to explain how much they may or may not have in the vault. You know, it's how many different ways can you make the pool sound like it has more in it?
Oh, exactly. I mean, look, let's come up with new terms. Let's use monikers like rehypothecation.
How about location swaps for gold? You gold that I claim is in my vault for gold you have, real gold you have in your vault. And we'll call that a location swap.
How convenient. A location swap. And here's the irony of it. You know, the folks who are guarding the gold are the folks in charge of the gold and the folks reporting the gold. And there really hasn't been an accurate or at least above board estimate accounting of stockpiles. Why don't you tell people a little bit more about the services you provide and how they can find out more about Kirby Analytics, please?
Catch me on the web at kirbyanalytics.com. You know, I write when I feel I have something to add to the big picture. I write it and post it for subscribers. And I like to keep my subscribers aware of all the interviews I do with outlets like you, Chris. So that's kind of sort of what I am. And I'm out there. I'm out in a boat in the market. I'm trying to spread the good word as best I can.
It's good word as long as you're not part of the plunge protection team. It sounds to me like eventually there's going to be a point where the markets are just overwhelmed with demand, and it might not be as gradual as we saw from 2001 through 2012, upward sloping, 45 degree ascent in the precious metals. This seems to me like it's just a sea change moment at any time could erupt.
I believe so.
All right, Rob Kirby, great stuff as always. Let's talk soon.
Pleasure being with you.
It's a pleasure to welcome back Bill Murphy from Gold Antitrust Committee. Got it. With Chris Powell, they're looking out for the gold market investors and watching for manipulation schemes. Welcome back, Bill Murphy.
Good to hear from you, Chris.
Good to talk to you. And, I understand that you're feeling in better spirits today. The precious metals have caught a bid. Tell us what you see happening in the markets, please.
At least yesterday, back from the dead, they've been so comatose. And the 3% rise in silver that we had was in one day was totally negated. Gold's 3% rise was partially negated. But gold has a lot of support at down where it was a couple days ago. And it had that, out of nowhere rally yesterday, and at least bring some life back into a more of a market. And if silver can get above 14 and a quarter, and it's pretty close today, then it'll negate this massive top that it just completed. And the top, which is the way things can happen, it turns into a bottom should it close above that level and then go from there.
We've also had the greenback working against us. It had a big breakout a few weeks ago. I think startled a lot of investors. It looked toppy, got some strength there. It looks like the Fed and policymakers, they want to keep raising rates into 2019. But at some point, don't you expect the markets to recognize, there's only so many arrows in the Fed's quiver. At some point, they're going to run out of ammunition, and these markets are going to break free.
Well, absolutely. I mean, gold and silver are so cheap, especially silver, which is gold-silver ratio got up to 86. It's farcical, and they're artificially cheap, and at some point, all of this, what you're talking about, everything's going to be discounted, or already has been. I mean, we had zero interest rates years ago, and what did it do for gold and silver? Nothing, because of what I call the gold cartel and the suppression schemes. And at some point, these schemes have, got to end. We've already, really, the way I look at it, 7 to 7.5 year bear markets. We're due for a big change in a very explosive way, I think.
Take a look at the FANG stocks. These are your high-flying techs, as most folks know, which basically involves Facebook, Amazon, of course Netflix, and Google, among a few others. They've really been suffering. That's not great news for any of us. I think it's indicative of at least sector rotation in U.S. equities. And, obviously at some point, those funds are going to start looking for a little more realistic returns and safety. I think we've seen some of that. Also wanted to talk to you today about an interesting article comment from Alistair MacLeod over at Gold Money. Bank of England refused Venezuela 14 tons of its gold. This is an interesting precedent. It's the first I've seen that I can recall where they just denied a request for the return of your funds, repatriation. And here's their argument that I think is flimsy at best, concerned about money laundering. I would argue it's de facto shakiness within the ranks of the central bankers.
Well, what a horse manure excuse for not returning gold.
I don't trust you enough to give you back your gold.
It is just, what is interesting to me about that is for years we heard from some of our colleagues over in London how tight the gold market is. And quite frankly, that hasn't meant a thing year after year after year. And we hear about all these the gold that's leaving England and going here and going there and tightness and different backwardations, not great but small, and that it's going away. And this is the first indication of what these fine guys have been talking about is correct, and the bad guys, the gold cartel again, as I call it, could be hitting the wall. I mean, this takes it more out of the speculation area, more into the factual area, and that would be my reasoning for it. They're not giving it back because it's gone, and it's trying to get, or at least getting what they have left, would create a problem. And so They come up with this silly excuse for not returning it to Venezuela.
Yeah, and let's investigate this term gone. You know, it has, I think, several different definitions here. I mean, firstly, gone can mean that it's there, but it's been rehypothecated so many times, nobody knows who owns what. Gone, I think, can mean come get your gold. We got the gold. We've got the guns. We're way up here in the Northern Hemisphere. You're way down there in the Southern Hemisphere. Well, maybe you should send your big Venezuelan fleet of naval cruisers to convince us to pick it up. This is an interesting scenario, but it's definitely at least looks like an endgame play. Nervousness, I think, and it's just indicative of overly anxious central bank regime that knows that the days are numbered, that there's something big coming, and they don't want to risk parting with said precious metal. Moving on here, the Spider Gold Trust, the largest gold-backed exchange fund, of course, seeing big flows out of riskier equity ETFs and markets into gold bullion. They had the highest peak now, 24 million ounces in their supposed stockpiles. I'd like your thoughts on what this might indicate, this trend.
You know, again, it really hasn't meant much. Was that as to the end of October?
That was actually end of August, so it's an earlier reading.
You know, we've gone into comatose trading, and it's been, you know, then we had the red till just yesterday. We're back in the weeds. We had silver and contract new low ground. It's good to see that coming, and I think that you're correct that the way these markets are trading and indications where other stocks, where GE may have a debt problem, and Goldman Sachs, a highly respected firm, of course, you know, their stock is in shambles, and Apple. As concern is all of a sudden perhaps beginning to really grow in terms of investments. You know, every correction we've had in the stock market for, what, 10 years, it always goes right back up, complacent and understandably so. But recently, that's starting to get, you know, shaken up a bit, and what you're talking about here could really pick up steam, and it could really be quite something if, in fact, getting back to the gone principle of the gold, that all of a sudden everybody wants it when nobody wanted it, you know, till recently, and then it's having trouble, you know, getting it. So that's why I think our next move up is going to be explosive. It won't be a gradual one like we saw for the first 12 years part of this decade. I mean, it's going to be something very special, I think.
Yeah, it's interesting you'd bring up GE because this, of course, one of the last remaining key components of what was essentially the original Dow Jones Industrials, you know, the composite there. It looks to me like it's ready to be kicked out of the blue chip status because take a look at the chart. I mean, you're looking at a company that was trading $25 to $30 just a year or so ago, entered a death spiral down last check around $7 or $8, which means it's probably now a pretty good buy. But I mean, that's not the type of thing we advise folks to do here. Look, catching falling knives. One of the key blue chips, and it obviously is about ready to be kicked out of the Dow. One of the greatest technological behemoths of all time, redefining, you know, the modern electronic age, General Electric, gone. Do you want to put all your eggs in that type of basket? Keeping with our FANG stock original thesis, big fans of Netflix, Nvidia, and many others. However, let's not bet the farm. Make sure we've got at least 20% in the yellow metal and silver. And when it's on discount like this, you know, you can maybe take a little speculative risk because the return to the mean could be pretty spectacular here. Tell us how we might return to the mean.
In my terms of looking at things, I mean, silver is the cheapest asset in the world. I mean, the fact is it's collapsed from, you know, 50 to 14. I mean, that is just mind-boggling in the past number of years. And it's here was that was the price that we had in 1980. So it is, I think, going to be absolutely a spectacular investment when it you know, gets to 21, which I've mentioned many times. Of course, first it's got to get to 15. And gold, I mean, it's, you know, at trading, you know, above, you know, 1,200 for crying out loud, after all that's been done, we've talked about that many times, it is so undervalued, and when it gets going, it's going to be, you know, spectacular, I think. You know, you've heard me say this before, but I'm a Newton's Law fan of equal and opposite reactions, talking about returning to the mean, but I think as bad as gold and silver have been these last number of years, they will be that much better on the upside.
I mean, we might even defy gravity here, break not only Newton's but Einstein's laws of physics. And one of the interesting components that might just help propel, I think, such an event could be this overlooked concept of inflationary tax burdens. And what do I mean exactly? Well, let's talk about the tariffs. We've talked about in the past here how the tariffs on Canadian lumber have already increased or inflated the price of new homes here domestically approximately 9 to 10% on just one tariff. Tell me that's not inflationary. Of course, from the Austrian perspective, it's not because it doesn't impact the money supply. But, you know, from the more Keynesian and monetarist viewpoint, it's inflationary because it impacts prices directly. So any way you want to slice it, I mean, prices are going up. Prices go up for lumber, prices go up for key resources. Then there are other key resources in manufacturing, such as silver. You know, the most underloved, the most three standard deviations to the downside of the precious metals. What's to stop something from occurring in the silver market, Bill Murphy, similar to palladium, precious metal trading at $100 or $200? And before you know it, it's nearly at parity with gold. And the argument is, the case is, well, it's just really useful in catalytic converters. And there's been tremendous auto sales, people front-running the tariffs around the world. Maybe that's the case. Do you see a sort of wake-up moment where silver catches fire, just like palladium?
Exactly. That's what I was talking about. Once it gets above, in my opinion, 21, I've been looking for $100 silver now. Couldn't be more off base for a year or two or more. And I think it's going to, what you're talking about is exactly what's going to happen. That's how silver is going to trade. It's going to go bonkers once it's all cleaned out and the J.P. Morgan crowd is forced to retreat or just stops what they're doing. And it is going to be something. And, of course, it could go much higher than 100, but for right now, 100 looks pretty good to me.
Hey, that's the key takeaway for today's show. Silver goes bonkers. Triple digits at least, Bill Murphy at Gotta.org. Can you tell us a bit more about Gotta.org and La Metropole Cafe, please?
My colleague Chris Powell does a great job. We just had a lot of fun in New Orleans and seen a lot of good people. And they can get on his list at www.gotta.org. And Chris does a great job there. And I've been doing La Metropole Cafe now for 20 years, and people can sign up for a 2-week free trial and see if it is of interest.
Bill Murphy, thank you.
Good to hear from you, Chris.
This is Robert Ian with GoldSeek.com Radio. Change can be a painful process, especially in mainstream media with their declining revenues and growing obsolescence that drives a relentless quest to remain relevant at all costs, including sacrificing the truth and ignoring their own confirmation bias and widening double standards, as they struggle to maintain top-down control over public discourse and narratives in a world that is continually driven more and more by direct peer-to-peer communication. Mainstream media has, in many ways, become clickbait entertainment, whose goal is not to inform, but rather to persuade and get an emotional rise out of you by any means possible. Have you noticed nearly everything reported on now is a crisis? Or should I say, they would like you to believe that nearly everything reported on now is a crisis? It seems the more noise mainstream media makes, the more influence they think they are having. That used to be true. But all that changed in the 2016 presidential election. Do you recall the famous New York Times poll on October 20th of 2016 that gave Hillary Clinton a 92% chance of winning and Donald Trump an 8% chance of winning? The media has never recovered from having their bias polling and reporting exposed so dramatically. At the time of this recording, the 2018 midterms are just days away. Instead of listening to the polls that keep pounding over and over that House control will be lost, maybe we should be considering the possibility of a two-third Republican supermajority being voted into both houses. I'm not suggesting that will happen, but given the order of magnitude of the media's miscalculation in 2016, it should be an outcome under consideration. Another outcome that should be under consideration is the possibility certain House, Senate, and governor races will not be decided on November 6th, but instead will immediately go into litigation. In all likelihood, the legal briefs are already written for a variety of election outcome scenarios. If you thought the Brett Kavanaugh confirmation hearings for the Supreme Court were vicious and ugly, just wait and see what a contested midterm election will look like. If you haven't caught up on the latest presidential executive orders, including the one on election interference, I suggest doing so, because the mainstream media is steadfastly ignoring these critical subjects and, by default, is hoping to keep you in the dark. Alec Baldwin, who portrays President Trump on Saturday Night Live, was recently accused of punching a man in the jaw who pulled into a parking spot that was apparently being held for the actor. When Baldwin was released from police custody, he denied assaulting anyone. He was reported as saying that normally he would not comment on something as egregiously misstated as this story. He claims the assertion that he punched anyone over a parking spot is false and wanted to go on the record stating as much. He finished by saying he realizes it has become a sport to tag people with as many negative charges and defaming allegations as possible for the purposes of clickbait entertainment. In attempting to reframe the accusations leveled against himself, Alec Baldwin has just provided a crystal clear insight that some might call a Freudian slip, about the true purpose of what the weaponized media and entertainment world do to us, day in and day out, ad nauseam. They tag people with as many negative charges and defaming allegations as possible, for the purposes of clickbait entertainment, or, in the case of the midterm elections, clickbait politics. Their goal is not to inform, but rather to misinform, reshape, and control the narrative. And in doing so, get an emotional rise out of you by any means possible. So you keep watching, listening, and engaging. Media bias is becoming more transparent. The best recourse is to selectively engage and turn off the rest. And until next time, this is Robert Ian with ConquerChange.com. Thanks, Chris.
Okay, Robert, thanks for another excellent installment. Well, that wraps up this week's GoldSeek.com radio episode. For two new big guests, be sure to check out next week's show. Until we talk to you again, have a great week.
GoldSeek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice.